Hello, and welcome to Trashy Divorces, Trashy Royals edition. My name is Stacy.
I'm Alicia. I love Wednesdays. This series is so much fun. Thank y'all for joining us for another week of Trashy Royals as I continue my Henry VIII sandwich.
Phrasing.
I mean, this week, our episode is going to delve into Henry's fifth wife, Catherine Howard, one of the four ladies that Henry VIII executed.
Murdered.
Inside the Tower Green. This one is actually a twofer, because he not only executes his wife, Catherine, he will execute her lady-in-waiting, who assisted her in her, shall we say, liaisons. Thanks for tuning in. Hope y'all enjoy it. There is one other lady, because Henry's got four. There have only been five women executed inside the Tower Green. There's four of these ladies so far in this little Henry VIII murder sandwich. I brought you three. There's one more, and that is Margaret Pohl. And if you want to hear her episode, you can go get it free at our free Patreon link, where you can listen to some fun stuff.
That is at bit.ly/trashcandy.
You just go there. There's a bunch of Henry VIII stuff. Hever Castle, Margaret Pohl, love letters. Those will stay up this week, and next week they'll be changing out.
But all you Tudor nerds, you can get your fix over there at bit.ly/trashcandy.
And if you're not a Tudor nerd, maybe you'll learn a little something about the monster that Henry VIII is.
He is.
In this episode today, Stacey, you know what we got to do.
Is it go, go, go? All right, Alicia, I've riled up the cats. Let's do this.
I love it. Welcome back to Trashy or Catty or Tudors, friends. This week, we are going to get into the last of Hank VIII's executions of ladies on the Tower Green. It's the anniversary of two of these executions. We've talked about the first, Anne Boleyn, and the second, Margaret Pohl. This week, it's a doubleheader. Ooh, ouch.
That's bad.
Two executions for the price of one. Okay, the executioner is paid per head, but you get my drift.
Oh my God.
Two in one day.
I mean, it's sensible, but you would think a salary and benefits package might be wiser.
Hold up. Okay, timestamp. No,
really a per piece kind of thing.
It really was. Story, man. Timestamp. February 1542.
I mean, honestly, though, by February in England, it's probably just miserable.
It's pretty dreary.
Everyone's probably pretty... So,
the 13th of February, in fact, the executions... Oh, cat.
You made the jump, though.
Good job, buddy.
Barely. Nearly fell. Okay.
The executions of the very young Catherine Howard and the very complicit Jane Boleyn.
So Catherine Howard was the 15-year-old that he married or whatever who kept
17,
having...
17, yeah.
Okay, kept having...
Yep.
All of her teenage lovers visit after she was married to the king.
We're going to reassess some history today.
Okay.
We're going to dismiss some myths in this episode.
Myth-busting. Mm-hmm. Trashy divorces style.
So Jane Boleyn, as you remember, is the sister-in-law of Anne Boleyn, Henry VIII's second wife. Ooh. So 1542, this is 6 years later.
Wait, Jane Boleyn is the sister of Anne Boleyn?
The sister-in-law of Anne Boleyn. She's married to George Boleyn, her brother.
Gotcha. Okay. Ooh.
Dude.
Not helping. He would like to podcast with us.
Come on.
Get in the sunbeam, dude.
Jesus Christ.
Get in the sunbeam.
There's sunbeam spot in a chair right there. What? Come here. Okay. Look at that. I just made you a throne.
Come here.
Here's a sunbeam throne.
Here.
There you go.
Who's got a sunbeam?
In a chair next to the lady.
Right there on his body.
Spoiler cats. What do you mean?
Psh. So Jane Boleyn is the sister-in-law of Anne Boleyn.
Okay.
Henry's second wife.
Wife of Anne Boleyn's brother. Okay.
George. So this is 6 years later, 1542.
Okay.
Henry is going to kill his fifth wife and her lady-in-waiting. How do we get to this cold and dreary Monday in February 1542 in English history? Okay, so if you don't already know, hot news drop here. Henry VIII is a monster.
Mm-hmm.
In May of 1536, he killed his wife, Anne Boleyn, and her brother, George Boleyn, Lord Rochford. Now, George ascended at court, not with the rise of Anne, but with the rise of Mary Boleyn, who was Henry's mistress. Remember?
Okay.
But George is going to ascend with Mary and Anne and all of his family and all of the Howard relations. Dad Boleyn is a big deal. But Uncle Howard, the Duke of Norfolk, is a bigger deal. So Tudor men, right? Not all men, but all Tudor men. Remember in this time, they string Anne up on false charges. And Jane Boleyn, Anne's sister-in-law, over time has developed this really seedy reputation of being the one to lay charges against her husband George and Anne of incest. Jane is seen as the baddie of the day. It's all Jane's fault that George got slung up in this.
Can I just say, as someone who has a Jane in my girl gang, shout out.
Hey, Jane.
I completely understand that Jane is the baddie in these groups.
Jane, like, we're gonna dismiss the myth here, because I've been just as guilty to sling Jane up in this. But after a significant amount of research, let's talk about Jane. Yeah. Jane Parker, born in 1505, into a big deal family. She is actually a distant cousin of Henry VIII through the Beaufort line.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Parkers are members of the upper class for sure. They have money. And they have the shoes to match. They are well-heeled.
Mm.
Jane goes to court. At about 15, she's going to be a lady-in-waiting for Catherine of Aragon. Okay? Jane will attend, in 1520, the Field of the Cloth of Gold. Remember, that was the big deal show-off tournament between Hank VIII and Frankie the One from France. Okay, 1522. At the Great Chamber in York Place. York Place is Cardinal Wolsey's townhouse in Westminster. Once Wolsey has his downfall, York Place is going to be taken via his attainder in 1529 and be converted, renovated into Whitehall Palace, which is the home that Henry and Anne are going to create together. This is going to be 8 years down the road. Anne will be the first queen to live in Whitehall Palace.
Okay.
Anyway, that's the location of where we're going. So it's March 1522, York Place. It's Shrove Tuesday. Shrove Tuesday is part of the Shrovetide celebrations. Go ahead and ask me.
What are the Shrovetide celebrations?
I'm so glad you asked. In the Tudor period, Shrovetide are the 3 days before Lent.
Okay.
So it's kind of like a Catholic Mardi Gras.
Going to say that, yeah. So that's when you get it all out.
Woo! It's party time.
Because for the next 40 days, you're barely going to be able to eat.
Right. Party time. Excellent.
So this is cakes and booze and cookies and meat and fat and all the things that you can't.
It's Shrove Tuesday.
Gotcha.
This is Fat Tuesday.
It's Fat Tuesday.
Okay. That's exactly it. Okay. So to celebrate Fat Tuesday in 1522, there is this huge sup. There's a huge dinner, a huge masquerade, a huge mosque. Okay. I mean, they have them all the time, but this is one of the ones that history really remembers. It's recorded. This one is the biggest deal. It's called the Chateau Vert pageant, the Green House. This pageant is the first recorded appearance at court of Anne Boleyn, because Anne has been over in France serving Queen Cloud, Frankie I's wife. But Anne is back at court because she has a shit-ass uncle, the Duke of Norfolk, who is making plays with her too. So pageant time. Chateau Vert, greenhouse. Who are our players? What's the setup? So the setup of this play, there are 8 ladies in the green palace, in the green tower, okay? They are beauty, honor, perseverance, kindness, constancy, bounty, mercy, and pity. They're in the castle. And they are being guarded by the 7 vices: danger, disdain, jealousy, vindictiveness, scorn, malbouche, which means lying, evil mouth.
Okay.
A person who says bad things tells lies.
Yeah.
The last of the vices is strangeness. These are being played by the choir boys, right? Okay. Now, Here's a setup. There are 8 courtly male virtues: amorous, nobleness, youth, attendance, loyalty, pleasure, gentleness, and liberty. These are played by Henry VIII and all of his buddies. Okay? The point of the masque, the male virtues want the ladies in the tower to be free. And the vices are like, fuck off. And so the males, the courtly male virtues, attack the castle with fruit. It's a drive-by fruiting. So they throw dates and nuts and pleasurable fruit at the castle. So they attack the castle. The ladies inside are defending the castle with rose water and comfits. The men, naturally, beat the vices, take the women out of the castle to do the dance that happens for the rest of the party.
Right.
Everybody at court wants to be an actor. Remember?
So they have liberated them from vice.
Correct. That's
because
the
in
plot.
The because in the yeah in the Christian pantheon, freedom is to be free of sin and vice and whatever.
On a completely unrelated note, sorry, this is way off the fuck topic.
Can I give you a off the wall harebrained theory about why this feast may have happened at this time?
Sure.
So I'm wondering if you get to February and your food stores are going to be pretty skint, but you're also going to have like fruit that's been in apples. You stored them in hay in a cold room, but some of them will have started to rot. Like some of this food that you've been storing over the winter to survive.
Maybe that's will have why gone it's a bad by fruiting. Maybe.
Maybe you have some cows going into calving season early, and it's unlikely that because there's going to be more cold snaps, there's going to be more deprivation. It's unlikely that those young would survive, so maybe they just butchered them. I don't know, it's just a theory. Like, it's a weird time to because your spring, you haven't even planted for spring yet in England.
I don't know.
Yeah, anyway, interesting. Because as we know,
I care, you're a
about,
nerd.
Care about the foods.
Okay.
Because the purpose of Lent is you're out of food. It's the most skint time. It's between
That's
winter.
That's not the purpose of Lent.
Well,
okay. The Lent is the 40 days at... I am not going to explain Catholicism to you. Okay, we're here for the Tudors.
But seriously, it's the... Boy, does it happen to coincide with the point in time when your winter stores have run out and your spring harvest hasn't come in yet.
Come for the executions. Stay for the Tudor food lesson.
Continue. No, that is not the purpose of Lent, but boy, does it coincide.
So the important players in this cast that you will have heard of, Mary, sister of Henry VIII, remember the French queen who's going to go on to marry, or has married Henry's like BFF, is beauty. Mary Boleyn is kindness. Anne Boleyn, in her first court appearance, is playing the role of perseverance, which I find kind of apt.
It is interesting.
And Jane Parker plays the role of constancy.
Okay.
So this whole time period arc is fascinating, food and otherwise. But remember, Anne Boleyn is not in the loop yet. She's just back from France. Henry VIII is getting down with Mary, her sister, at the time. So what all of this means, essentially, is what I'm trying to say, is Jane Parker is super connected at court. By the end of 1524, early 1525, she gets married to George Boleyn, Lord Rochford. She's Lady Rochford. The king gives them a house. And as Mary or Anne, their fortunes rise through time, George is their brother. They're going to get a better house, right? And Jane's on this fucking ride. And through history, the happiness of their marriage is contested. A lot of people say it was totally miserable, and George is gay, and Jane's bitter, and Jane hates Anne, and she's super jealous of how close Anne is to George. And here's what I would like to say straight up. None of that can be substantiated. What we do know is that George is pretty easy on the eyes and easy with the honeys. He gets around a lot. I am sure most men of the Tudor generation get around at court a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
But not all of them are brother-in-laws to the king and have their lives set out before the world in a fake news court because the king's fragile masculinity was at stake.
Do tell.
So May of 1536, it's beheading time. Jane Parker Boleyn, remembered as the beast of history for selling out her husband. legit. The only documented real-time source from the information of that period, the only verifiable thing that we can connect Jane with, and this goes back, I think we talked about this in the Anne Boleyn episode, is that Anne Boleyn confides to Jane about Henry VIII and his penis problems. And Jane tells her husband George about Henry VIII's penis problems. I mean, that's it. That is it. And remember, in George's trial, he gets handed the letter in court about Henry VIII's penis problems. And they're like, will you read that over and just verify that you wrote that, but don't read it out loud. And George is like, what? Not read this letter like where I wrote about the king's penis problems? Mm-hmm. All these words that you're telling me not this letter? Yeah, I wrote this letter. Let me tell you what it says. So all that's entered in the evidence of court. Okay. After this, George is in the tower. Anne's in the tower. Jane sends George letters in the tower, like during his stay there before he gets axed. He responds back, like, I'm going to petition Henry VIII. Like, she's fighting for him. Even Chapuis, the Spanish ambassador that everyone loves to hate, doesn't mention that Jane has sold out George or Anne. And if the sister-in-law of the queen was responsible for such charges, it would have been way bigger. I mean, it would have been huge news. It would have been the headline, right? Chapuis doesn't even talk about it. So Jane gets a lot of shit for being a weasel and a vindictive woman and a shrew, but there's no evidence to support that. There's a fantastic book Julia Fox has written about Jane that will give you a portrait that is far more accurate and sympathetic. Again, I may have given Jane a lot of shit in the past for this one, and for that I'm sorry. I'm glad I know better now. In this scheme, in 1536, I don't feel that Jane is complicit or guilty or in a way that history makes her out to be. She gets slung up in 1536 for being a truth teller.
That doesn't surprise me, actually. In the court of Hank VIII? No.
Just remember in the 1536 part. Okay. So Anne Boleyn, George Boleyn, out. Jane manages to save her own skin through this. She ends up appealing to Cromwell because her father-in-law has cut her off for money. So she's back with her family. She's got nothing to live on. So she appeals to Cromwell to appeal to her father-in-law. She ends up getting a meager sum to live on, but she's alive. I mean, her husband is dead. Like, she's a traitor to the, like, she's out. But she's alive, and she's not at court for a while, but she's working to get back in court. Like, all the titles that have come through George only descend, like, they don't have any kids, but they only descended with the male line. Like, she is destitute. She works her butt off to get back at court. Which, upon retrospect, she may have just wanted to stay in the country with her family. But Jane's going back for Jane Seymour. Okay? Eventually. Like, not immediately, but it takes Jane like a year or two to get back to court. Jane's back at court for the death of Jane Seymour. She'll stay at court, where she becomes a lady-in-waiting for Anne of Cleves. And then Jane will be a lady-in-waiting for Henry's fifth queen, Catherine Howard. In terms of tragedy, Catherine Howard's story may be the winner-winner chicken dinner of Henry VIII's queens. So let's hop it up. Time hop. Whoosh, whoosh, to 1540.
Little TARDIS sound.
The marriage, as it were, to Anne of Cleves. Remember, it was made for political alliances, like tender swipe left or whatever it is. It ends after 6 months. AOC, that's what I... Anne of Cleves. Makes out like... I always use initials, so sometimes it... Sorry. Anne of Cleves makes out like a bandit. She is now the king's sister. Because remember, Henry was just like, if you will go the fuck away, yeah, I will give you whatever you want.
Can have a palace in Richmond, and you can brew your own Germanic beer, and you can just like...
Get down. Please,
eat
everyone.
Eat carbs, yeah, and live out the rest of your days in joy. Yeah.
I'll hold you in high regard. You have your own lands and money.
I won't cut your head off ever.
Her head's on.
Yeah.
Woo!
She outlives him, right?
Mm-hmm. Anne of Cleves is going to outlive Henry and all of his other wives. Oh. She's a big deal to Elizabeth I as well.
Sibling fights are unavoidable, but what if every fight you had was under a microscope on a global scale? That's the reality for brothers Prince William and Prince Harry. They were each other's closest friends and allies since the death of their mother, but that all began to crack as they married and took wildly different approaches to their royal duties.
Wondery's podcast, Dis and Tell, is hosted by comedians Sydney Battle and Matt Bellassai. Each episode unpacks one of pop culture's most iconic celebrity feuds, and they recently took a deeper look into the real reason William versus Harry started.
It's actually much bigger than these two brothers, stretching back into the history of the British monarchy. Did their feud start with the royal family's mistreatment of Meghan Markle, or was it something that started much earlier?
Follow Dis and Tell on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Trash Pandas, Stacy here to share my latest take a mental breather from your day find, Two Dots. Two Dots is a free-to-download puzzle-based mobile game where you connect dots in relaxing puzzles while unlocking levels and collecting treasure and prizes along the way. Connect at least two adjacent dots of the same color to make a move, and remember, dots can connect horizontally and vertically, but never, ever diagonally. And as engaging as the main puzzles are, there are also side quest game modes like the scavenger hunt, where you find hidden objects amidst riotously colorful art, and classic adventure game vibes in the arcade. Each fun and relaxing Two Dots puzzle offers a new gameplay experience, plus the chance to collect trophies, medals, and other souvenirs of your adventures. As you advance through the levels, you'll earn various power-ups and special dots with new effects, like erasing all dots of a certain color or clearing a row and column simultaneously, and the colorful visuals find the perfect balance between stimulating and soothing.
Two Dots is free to download, and you can play even when you're offline. Make it a party by challenging your friends on Facebook. If you're ready to kick back and unwind, download Two Dots for free on Android and iOS and start connecting.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Just keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Henry VIII.
Okay. So she lives a long time.
She's the winner. Right. She's the verifiable lottery pool winner of his wife.
Gotcha.
In terms of best outcome. Mm-hmm. Catherine wins for tragedy. Because Henry VIII, right, Anne of Cleves isn't as lusty as he expected.
Right.
And remember when they first met on New Year's, he crashes in one of his big extravaganzas where I'm a bad guy and you're supposed to, and she's like, who the fuck are you?
Right. He and his friends like faked a home invasion because that was his thing and it freaked her out.
Cosplay.
Instead of exciting her, it alarmed her and he was not happy with that. Yeah.
That's not the only problem.
It's funny to imagine gigantic Henry VIII like climbing ropes to get to her privy chamber or whatever. You know, like it's hard to picture
that. Well, he's 49 now. He's not climbing anything. Okay. And remember his big pussy leg and his medical condition. So he is a monster.
Sure.
Henry, besides all the problems with Anne of Cleves and the we don't cosplay the same way, Henry has a new girl catching his eye, who is Catherine Howard.
Oops.
One of those Howards.
Poor choice for her.
There's never a wrong time to take a look at the things that are keeping you from living your best life. And if now is your moment, we recommend BetterHelp.
BetterHelp is confidential, convenient, and safe professional counseling with your own licensed therapist. BetterHelp's quick questionnaire matches you with a counselor in under 24 hours, and you can message your counselor at any time, even between scheduled phone or video sessions. And if you're not clicking, that's fine. It is free to change counselors.
BetterHelp is available worldwide. They offer specialized expertise that may not be available locally where you live. It's more affordable than traditional counseling. Financial aid is available as well. It has just never been easier to find a licensed professional counselor.
In fact, there are so many people using BetterHelp that they are recruiting counselors in all 50 states.
We want you to start living your happiest life today. As a Trashy Divorces listener, you get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/trashy.
Join more than 1 million people who are taking charge of their mental health. Visit BetterHelp, that's betterhelp.com/trashy.
The Duke of Norfolk is her uncle too. Catherine is a first cousin of Anne Boleyn and Mary Boleyn. She has come, Catherine, as a lady-in-waiting to Anne of Cleves in 1540. Now let's give a little bit of her history. She is born maybe 1523, maybe, because it's not recorded. But she's also one of 11 children. Her dad is broke. He is begging to support the family, and he should know better, because even though he had 11 kids, he is from a family that has 21 children. I just can't. Catherine's mother dies when she's 5, and Catherine is sent to live with her father's stepmother, Duchess Agnes Strickland. Duchess Agnes is a dowager duchess, older lady, and her home, much like other dowager widows at the time, was set up to be a boarding home and school-ish for young girls within the court.
To teach them manners and how to present for court, right?
And how to play the virginials and how to, like,
it's
pretty loose. Like, the girls are left mostly unsupervised. And there's a lot of male activity.
I'm sure.
Visiting the honey hive where the girls sleep at night in the dormitory. So Catherine Howard, by the age of 13, is being molested by her music teacher, Henry Mannix.
Yay.
He's twice her age. He's a total creep.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Well, I don't think she would say,
no,
I'm being molested. Like, that wasn't it at the time.
Oh, no, of course not. No, I understand. I'm just saying, like,
but hey, come on in. Let me teach you the flute. Sit down, honey. Like, poor Catherine is just aggressively and violently used her entire life by men. She is a victim of...
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Henry Mannix, total creep. So another dude comes into the picture, and this one she actually likes, or likes like you do when you're 15 and don't know any better, at a country house. This guy's name is Francis Derham, and he is the secretary to Agnes, the Dowager Duchess. Okay. Catherine Howard and Francis Derham fall in love, and old molester Henry Mannix is kind of mad that Catherine Howard would choose love over his treachery. So he writes a note to the Dowager Duchess. Hey, dear Agnes, you should go into the dorms at night 30 minutes after lights out.
Oh, my God.
And Agnes does. And it's bad.
Yeah, I like, bet.
Super bad.
Well, if she's been not supervising these girls for ages.
Dude, it is. It is straight up the Moulin fucking Rouge in the dormitory at night. Like, it is. And some girls aren't, but a lot of girls are. So the girls that aren't are making notes about every girl that is.
Right.
Right? Like, it's a...
We call them introverts.
Call them bookworms. So Agnes finds out Francis Derham is sent away.
A few of them were lesbians.
Catherine Howard is heartbroken. She and Francis Derham may have because... They hung from each other like sparrows or whatever it is called, may have been actually pre-contracted for marriage.
Mm-hmm.
This
it's okay. The king may have had other ideas and, you know.
This just
breaks
Catherine Howard's poor little 15-year-old heart.
Yeah, like you do.
But Catherine Howard, if I haven't mentioned yet, is good looking. Mm-hmm. Like, she's beautiful.
No, that's clearly what has caused many of her problems in life,
and,
or at least the problems that men have caused in her life. Yeah.
And Agnes is like, hey, maybe I need to get you out of here. Maybe you'll do better at court. So the Duke of Norfolk is licking his chops to get back into power, because with Anne's downfall, it worked so well the first time. We've been out of power. How about another Howard girl? This one's even prettier. Henry's even older, and Henry needs an heir. Okay. Catherine Howard's off to court. She's excited. She's taken in by it all. And soon she's like, hey, Francis, who? This is definitely where I belong. Like, she forgets all about any past she may have had because, woo, this is court and it's great. She's 17. She's lady in waiting to Anne of Cleves. And Henry's 49 and he's infatuated. And little Catherine Howard, beautiful, loves to dance. She loves animals. She really likes dogs. Like, she is a 17-year-old child.
This just sounds terrible.
And she's hot.
I want to be a veterinarian when I grow up.
Like, yes, exactly. exactly it. But Henry is hot for teenager.
Sure.
He's going to marry her 3 weeks after his divorce from Anne of Cleves. They're going to have a 10-day honeymoon.
And then he cuts her head off.
Yeah, well, it's going to take 2 years, but she's his rose without a thorn. Her motto, no other will but his and all that. She's not crown queen. They're waiting for her to get pregnant.
Right.
But young and clearly fertile by the looks of her family line.
Are they just tired of maybe spending the money to have big soirees to crown someone queen only to have them lose their heads?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. This is an expense for the crown we don't really need.
Yeah. We'll get into it if there's an heir.
But Catherine Howard, like at 17, she likes the pampering and the clothes and the jewels.
Who doesn't want to? Yeah.
I'm 17. And the benefits of being queen, but she's also handed a household with hundreds of servants. Catherine of Aragon.
Sorry, did you say girl boss?
Catherine of Aragon was a queen. She could run a house.
Right.
Anne Boleyn ran the house. Like, they're running households, and Henry hands a household over to Catherine
Howard. To a 17-year-old, yeah.
And she's like, what the fuck?
I am at best a mid-level manager.
Want to wear the pretty dresses.
But, I mean, this is theoretically what this sort of finishing school type thing that she has been living at for a while theoretically would have been teaching her, but I guess wasn't.
Well, that's the education she would have gotten if she wasn't being molested by the shady fucking music teacher. Mm-hmm. Like, all right. So Henry decides to take his youthful, beautiful bride, old, dirty, pus-ridden leg Henry, goes on a tour of the north with his bride to show off his lusty plaything. And Catherine will begin an affair with a guy named Thomas Culpepper on this trip. Okay, let's bring Jane Boleyn back into it. She will help cover up their affair. She sneaks Thomas Culpepper in and out, like down the back stairs. She keeps a secret. Until all the people remember who shared the dorm with Catherine all those years ago in the honey hive are like, wait a minute. She's entirely unsuitable to be queen. Like, you have to remember, the Howards have enemies. The Howards are now ascending back at court. So family factions and court and how it's all related, the enemies of the Howards are like, oh no, we've got some great scandal on this kid. And they'll do anything to bring the Howards down. Catherine Howard, I want to be a veterinarian, is just caught up in it all, like, okay, so all of this news gets to Thomas Cranmer. Now, if you remember Cranmer, he was the pastor to Anne Boleyn, and his mortal enemy is the Duke of Norfolk. I still think Cranmer will always hold Norfolk responsible for Anne's downfall. So Cranmer is like, hey, Henry, these are the things I'm hearing. And Henry doesn't believe it. He orders an investigation, and now everybody's coming out of the woodwork to tell what they know about Catherine Howard. They find Francis Derham, question him. And he's like, yeah, we totally fucked in the dormitory. We were totally married. I don't know why she's married to you, because I'm in love with her and I want her back. Jesus Christ. So in this time, Jane Boleyn is called to talk about it too. And Jane has helped them in all their rendezvous. Like, Anne Boleyn was not guilty. Catherine Howard, certainly guilty. And the problem with this is it's not just that Jane knows it was going on. Jane participated in the plot of going on. Catherine Howard in the tower. Like, she's got the circumstance of being a woman in the time of men. And terrible luck, and it's tragic. Jane Boleyn is in the tower, too, for her part in all of this. Like, it's reckless and foolish, no doubt. There's no denying her complicity. But here's where, I don't know. Like, does Jane help with that one time? Because Catherine was like, please, please, please. And once she's helped one time, what's the difference in helping us again? Over and over and over?
Yeah.
And, like, we're never going to know why or how Jane did what she did. But Jane, remember, has also seen the alternative. Her husband and her sister-in-law have been beheaded. Maybe she's tired of losing family members.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So Jane in the tower suffers a nervous breakdown. Some people say definitely suffered a nervous breakdown. Some are like, oh, she pretended to be insane. But she loses her mind one way or another. She is questioned on the daily. She's not tortured, but she's questioned every day for like 5 months. And she is definitely making a case through her words and behavior like she's insane. She's suffering a nervous breakdown. And there's this little handy rule in England.
Is it called might makes right?
No. Did I tell you about the first rule that Henry changed, that now you have to disclose your sexual past?
I don't know.
I missed a paragraph. Ooh.
So his brides now are required to disclose their sexual past?
So that's the first. I'm so sorry. I missed a paragraph somewhere.
Basically, Catherine Howard was supposed to have
guilty of high treason because she was supposed to be like, hey, I've slept with this many people.
Sure.
Okay. Henry's going to change rule number two here. As right now in Tudor England, if you are declared insane, you cannot be executed. Mm-hmm. You can now. So instead of just putting her away, Jane is going to get slung up when that rule changes.
Yep.
So Jane can and will be executed right after Catherine Howard on the 13th of February, 1542, in the last of Henry VIII's Killing Women on the Tower Green tour, because he's a prick.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah. That's
a very final conclusion to the story.
It's a sad story.
Yeah. I mean, it does. There are not a lot of great stories about Henry VIII.
No, I mean, so when we talk about him becoming a monster, like all that kind of spun off from his whatever medical condition he had to make him just an ass.
Yeah.
Now, come on. How much do you look like an ass face anyway when you're 50 years old parading around the country with a teenager? You look stupid anyway. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. He's a prick. I hate that guy.
Or, I mean, I don't know. I'm increasingly of the opinion that to men, you look like a god. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe we just think that that's ridiculous because we're women, and men just think that it's awesome if you can be 50 with a pussy leg and just a terrible human and have a 17-year-old wife. I don't know.
Well, okay, so the one good thing.
I mean, hashtag not all men, I guess, but maybe it's all men. I don't know. I don't know anymore. Nothing makes sense anymore.
No, it's what is this thing you speak of?
I don't know.
Sense?
Burn it down! I'm just back right to it. Sorry.
So the good thing that happens in this is that Norfolk is going to get a little bit slung up for this because of the Anne O'Cleves debacle and the Catherine Howard debacle. Let's see. I mean, this has a million thread spinoffs, and there is going to be one more woman, because there are a total of five that are executed on the Tower Green inside the walls of the Tower of London. But that will be done by Henry's first daughter, Mary I, on a future trashier Tudors. But those are Henry's executions. And I'm just sad. Please listen to Sixth the Musical. All I Want to Do is Catherine Howard's song. And it's
how
great.
How amazingly different English history would be if Richard III had won at the Battle of Bolingbroke? Was that, what was it? Anyway, the battle where he was killed, Bosworth Field, he was killed, yeah. That's just amazing. It would have kept Henry VII from ever becoming king and therefore all of this. Impossible to speculate. I mean, like, you know, I would say Elizabeth I was probably pretty good for England on the whole.
So if you want to spin that theoretical, it would be Margaret Pole's brother, who would have assumed after Richard III being the closest in the family line until somebody took him over. I don't know if Henry Tudor was inevitable or not.
Interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, that is Trashier Tudors for yet another week, yo. So trashy.
We're just all counterfactualing it up in a pursuit of justice. Of which there is none.
Trashy divorces for justice. If you can't get divorced, just behead them. God. All right. That's all I got.
All right.
Keep it trashy, friends.
Please do.
Until next time.
Until next time.
Bye.
Bye. Breaking news.
Sorry, y'all, there's an addendum to that whole episode for all of my Tudor nerd herd out there. And you're like, no, it's not the Duke of Norfolk that got wrapped up in that. It's not that at all. No, it's not that at all. And it woke me up at 2 a.m. because I just got like Aunt Irma about Tudor. So Thomas Howard, the third Duke of Norfolk. Okay. Gets a little wrapped up in the story that you just heard because, you know, he's the leader of the Howards and all that. But what I meant to say in the previous piece about the good thing that happens in that time, well, I consider it a good thing, is the execution of Thomas fucking Cromwell. Okay, so the Duke of Norfolk gets a chain of lucky escapes. I'm not kidding. He is strung up in the Tower after Catherine Howard's nonsense all the way to his death in 1554, but he has death papers drawn up a shit ton, but they're never signed. He is about to be beheaded on the day that Henry dies. Like, Henry never gets to sign the paper. Okay. The Dork of Norfolk. It's a hella story, but, like, Uncle Jerkface isn't going to die until 1554.
Okay.
But Cromwell, with this whole story we just heard, will get the axe because of the marriage to Anne Cleves.
Okay.
Because Cromwell arranges it.
Oh.
Right? And Henry's mad. And I guess old Cromwell didn't perform quite the duty the king needed him to. And Henry VIII has to behead someone. It's his favorite fucking thing to
do. Well, yeah.
So in 1540, before the executions of Catherine Howard and Jane Boleyn, after the divorce, like immediately after the divorce, he's getting married to Catherine Howard. And he's like, yeah, I think an execution will make this party fun. So July 28th, 1540, Thomas Cromwell gets axed. Now, I don't know if Thomas Cromwell is really surprised by this, because you have to remember he rose to power when Henry VIII wanted his last minister dead, Wolsey. Remember Cardinal Wolsey?
I do.
And Henry hung him out to dry.
Sure. Took over Hampton Court Palace.
Cromwell has been just as shady and just as seedy. And Cromwell's going to be arraigned under a bill of attainder. He's executed for treason and heresy. The king will, however, later express deep regret for killing him. But you don't get two heads.
Most people don't get two heads. So.
If I had two heads, I'd gladly give one to the King of England. Fuck you, Henry VIII. Anyway, please forgive this additional insert, but I had to communicate the good part, if executions at all can be good. And I left that part out of the story and got too excited. So, goodbye, Tommy C. Cromwell out. 1540. That's all I got.
1554?
Cromwell's out in 1540.
Norfolk loses his head. Dork of Norfolk
is out 1554. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. So confusing. Okay.
I just didn't want to be factually incorrect.
I gotcha.
My correctness is important to me.
I know it is.
I can't pronounce it worth a good goddamn.
It's also important to our listeners.
But
who appreciate your correctness.
At least get the right dates. All right. That's all I got.
Okay.
Keep it trashy. Keep it Tudor.
Ba-boom.
Out.
Your 4 minutes of Tudor enlightenment. Bye.
Bye. And thanks to you for listening. Trashy Divorces is a Hemlock Creatives production, created and produced right here in Atlanta, Georgia, by us, Stacy and Alicia, with a little research and writing help from the brilliant Melissa O.
Our art is by Sydney V. Smith. That's Sydney V. Smith at carbonmade.com. And our music is used with permission of Ratsy. Check her out at Ratsy's store on Instagram, and definitely drop into Ratsy's store anytime you're in Oberlin, Ohio.
You can contact us at trashydivorces@gmail.com or find us on the World Wide Web at trashydivorces.com.
If you need more trash candy in your life, our Patreon community includes some of the very best humans around and thousands of hours of bonus content at every level of support. Join the fun at patreon.com/trashydivorces.
Interested in some Trashy Divorces swag? Check out our merch shop and Trash Panda Enthusiasm Society at bit.ly/trashygear.
Want to advertise with us? Reach out to sales@advertisecast.com for more information.
And last but not least, come play with us on social media. I keep most of our Trashy Divorces Instagram hopping. Stacy and I share it up over on Facebook, including our Trashy Divorces podcast discussion group. Come join us over there, and thanks again, everybody, for listening.
Keep it trashy, y'all.